Chapter 37. I had never seen a gun fired before. Never heard it either. The noise in the small space was astonishing, like someone had smacked me on the head with a club. And the flash of the muzzle and the smell of burning, it was like nothing I had ever experienced. I saw Judah stagger backwards, heard my mother's distant, shocked scream. I realized that something had hit me. Droplets of something sticky and warm. And then I saw Peter Lightman collapse, the gun still clutched in his hand. He fell backwards onto the soft, ruined mass at the back of his head. But his face was almost untouched, apart from the dark, oozing hole beneath his jaw. He had put the muzzle beneath his chin and fired, blowing his brains through the back of his head. Slowly, slowly, I let myself sink to the ground. There were soft, gritty spatters across my face and chest, and I realized, with a sort of sick detachment, that they must be pieces of Peter Lightman's brains and skull.
"Hello?"
I heard, as if from very far away.
"Hello, honey, stay with me. Fuck, stay with me, you hear me?"
Then,
"Pam? Pam, where are you? Call 911. Shit, I mean 999. You know what I mean. Get the police. Get an ambulance. Lowe's hurt."
I could hear my mother crying a long way off, saying something I couldn't make out. I could hear the sound of sirens coming closer. I could hear Judah begging me to stay conscious, stay with him, feel his hand in mine. I could hear him asking me where I was hurt, where all this blood had come from, what had happened. Then everything slipped away. The next few hours were a confused jumble of memories. The shouts of the police as they entered my mother's little house, yelling at Judah to stay back, drop his weapon, Judah bellowing that he didn't have one and his wife was hurt. Then the ambulance, the paramedics binding up my foot, stabilizing the huge shard of glass, wheeling me out on a gurney. Someone must have taken Peter Lightman's body. I don't remember that part, but I do remember trying to hold on to the phone as they lifted me, pressing it into Judah's hands in the ambulance, begging him to get it to Dan with words that slurred and stumbled over each other.
"I don't give a shit about a phone, Lo," Judah said.
He was crying. I couldn't remember the last time I had seen him cry.
"You're the only thing that matters."
But somehow, I managed to hold on to my thoughts long enough to make him understand this wasn't just a phone. This was my freedom. This was what this whole thing had been about. At last he took it and told me I wasn't to worry anymore, and I lay back and let the tears of pain and exhaustion and relief leak out of the sides of my eyes and soak into the synthetic pillow they put under my head in the ambulance. Next was the disorienting nightmare of the emergency room, children crying, an elderly woman heaving into a bowl, a resigned-looking teen with his arm in a sling. I was wheeled into a side room where I was checked over, floating in and out of consciousness, while a doctor asked me questions I didn't know the answer to, questions, I suspected, were mostly just trying to keep me conscious and make sure I wasn't slipping away to the beckoning darkness. After that, they pumped me full of IV fluids and what I had to assume were extremely good drugs, judging by the way the throbbing agony in my foot suddenly became distant and unreal. And then somehow, someone removed the glass. I didn't see it happen, but I remember holding Judah's hand so tight I felt his knuckles crack and gritting my teeth as I endured the strange sensation of glass grinding against flesh and bone.
"She's very lucky," I heard one of the medics tell Judah. "It could have severed a tendon, but it's very clean."
And then, at last, sleep. Not at home, but in a ward, floating on a cushion of morphine that wore off slowly through the night, leaving me fractious and snappy at the nurse who came to check my blood pressure. And in between, the strangest dreams. Dark, hallucinogenic dreams of the kind I hadn't had since I was pregnant. I don't remember them all, just the strange vividness of the images and the disorientation when I awoke each time, unsure where I was or what was happening. There was one where I was helping Peter Leidman put his brain back in his head, piece by piece, sifting through the broken glass with blood-stained fingers for chunks of his cerebellum, helping him stuff the pale, soft mush back inside his skull. And then later, another Peter Leidman was lying at my feet, dead, and somehow in the dream, I was the one who had killed him, but I didn't care about that. All I cared about was running after a woman who looked like Carrie but wasn't. I chased her down dark, twisting corridors that moved around us both like a living organism, and when I finally caught her and she turned to face me, I saw that she was myself. That her face had morphed into mine, and we were the same person. I had been chasing myself. In the last dream, it wasn't Peter Leidman's brain, but Carrie's phone I was trying to put back together. A soft, gel-like phone that was falling apart in my hands, melting as I tried to keep it in one piece. The soft fragments were slipping through my fingers as fast as I could scoop them up. And I found I was crying, begging Judah to help me, but he wasn't listening. He was walking away towards a woman who looked like me, but wasn't. In the dream, I called for him until my throat was raw, but he was gone, and the phone in my hands was nothing but a puddle of melted goo. When I woke from that one, I was sweating, and I looked around first for Judah, and then, when I remembered that I was in the hospital, for my own phone. But it was nowhere to be seen. All I wanted was to text Judah, make sure he understood the importance of what I had given him before they took me away. Did he get the implications of what must be on that phone? Did he realize that whatever was on it, it was damning enough that Peter Leidman had broken into a house with a gun to try to retrieve it? I lay there, stewing silently in my own dread, until at last some invisible line was crossed. The sky outside was as dark and leaden as it had been 10 minutes ago, but the lights went on, and the ward began to come to life, with orderlies bringing around breakfast and starting ward rounds. Taking this as permission, I levered myself to standing, then hobbled my way across to the nursing station and begged them to contact Judah.
I have to see my husband. It's life or death.
The only thing you have to do is keep your weight off that foot, the nurse said, a little austerely. Your husband was sent home last night, but he'll be here as soon as visiting hours start.
She had the air of someone who'd heard it all, and I suppose I couldn't blame her. In her line of work, it literally was life and death, so it must be hard to take the assertion seriously from a woman moaning about calling her husband.
And what time is that?
10 a.m.
It was only just gone 7. 10 o'clock felt like a lifetime away. But there was nothing to do but wait. When Judah finally did arrive, I surprised myself by bursting into tears again. Maybe it was the drugs, but this was becoming a habit and one I didn't particularly like. At first, he couldn't understand what I was asking him through the sniffles, but eventually I made myself understood. Had he taken the phone to Dan? At that, he nodded.
Yes. Well, I mean, not exactly, but he knows about it, and so do Diggers and Wright. I'm handing it over this afternoon. Do you know what's on it?
I shook my head. No, but I know it must be bad for Peter Leibman. It was the phone that Carrie was using when they did the murder, so I guess maybe photos, maybe recordings of them discussing their plans. She wasn't stupid, Carrie. Isn't, I mean. Talking about her in the past tense had made my stomach shift, though I was by no means sure the present tense was correct either. If Peter Leibman had been prepared to break into the house of an elderly woman to protect himself, I had no illusions about what he would have done to Carrie. She'd been collecting information on Marcus for years. I'm sure she would have done the same to Peter. It was her only means of protecting herself.
And it might just have gotten her killed.
Judah's face was sober. I shook my head, but not because he was wrong, more because I couldn't bear for it to be true. Because if it was, I had done this. I had handed Carrie over to Peter Leidman's charming, handsome henchman and watched as she was driven away, probably to her death. How stupid of me not to have suspected that someone as clever and driven as Peter would want to know exactly what I was telling the police.
I thought again of Inspector Capaldi's words the first time I had met him, words that had stayed with me over the days since. It is much better to be frank about these things, I find. Honesty is always the best policy.
It made such sense to plant someone in the investigation to find out exactly what I knew, who I suspected, how far I was prepared to go to protect Carrie. How afraid Peter must have been when Carrie bolted from the hotel. Whatever their original exit plan had been, and I still wasn't sure whether Peter had believed they'd be running off into the sunset together or whether their pact had been more pragmatic, I doubted their agreed endgame would have included a midnight flit where Carrie disappeared without a word, just as the police were putting two and two together and preparing to break his alibi. He must have been frantic about where she was going, wondering whether she was planning to turn him in. And how he must have laughed when, just a couple of days later, I proved his worst fears right and solved them in the same phone call. I rang Capaldi up and offered Carrie there on a plate,
sending her right into his clutches. The only problem? She had left her phone behind. The phone with a record of all their calls and plots and messages. Maybe she even told him, taunted him.
You can kill me, but the evidence is out there. I've left it with someone I trust.
Little did she know that to someone with money like his, nothing is untraceable.
Lo, honey, it's over.
Judah was touching my face, trying to bring me back to the present. He knew me well enough to recognize the signs that I was spiraling into my own black void of anxious despair. He had seen it too often to let it slide.
Listen to me. It's over. And whatever happened to Carrie, it's not your fault. She lived a dangerous life, and she dragged you into it. But you fuck around long enough, you'll find out, and unfortunately, she did. That's not on you, hun. You did everything you could to save her.
I know, I whispered. I shut my eyes and let the last of the tears I'd shed earlier slide down my cheeks into Judah's shirt. I know. I had done everything I could, just like she had done her best to save me once upon a time. The difference was that she had succeeded, and I had failed.